Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
We're all giggling. We made it to Friday. We've made it to spring. It is March 22nd officially. Thanks for joining us for the Take Two podcast. Greg Hughes is sitting on the left side today.
I know.
Ooh. So he might start having left-centric tendencies.
I'm like Mara Rain
Carabello
Man.
Is on the right, and she might start talking like Greg Hughes today.
We're switching it up.
Yeah.
I like
Greg, you're looking
the same.
Liberal.
I hate change.
You do hate change.
I do hate
you
it.
You can't even look just, over this way.
It's hard. It's hard. Yes. But I did this on a dare. You said.
Do you feel uncomfortable?
And I wanted to show that I'm Renaissance
that manipulatable.
Greg. I'm Renaissance Greg. I can actually sit in a different chair.
You're that subject. You are. Look at you.
All right. Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing if it brings out different sides of you sitting on the opposite side. So thanks for being with us. The governor had until midnight last night to finish up all his signing and vetoes. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk a little bit about the Utah Foundation survey that just came out this week. Congress is still messing around with their spending package, and Mike Lee is in the talk again. I feel like he hasn't really ever gone away if Trump were to be president, that he might be in his cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about those things. Let's start, though, with the governor, finish up signing bills. There were a lot of signing. His hands probably cramped in that there were 591 bills passed in this legislative session. It was a record, and he had some interesting quotes that came out when he signed his letter about the vetoes. And he says, well, I suppose there's nothing inherently wrong with more bills. I truly believe it makes it more difficult to focus on the quality of the legislation. Is more sometimes more, Greg, or did they go over the top this time?
This challenge is one that we were confronting when I was serving in the legislature, and it is you don't want to put a glass ceiling over lawmakers in terms of limiting how they would represent their constituents, filing bills. There is a limit on how many literal hours in the day you have during a general session for committees and having a thorough process. So it's something that the legislature continues to try to figure out. Do you give more priority bills and everything else? More is not better, I will just tell you. Now, one thing to know, if you are reducing regulation, that requires a bill. So it doesn't, when we see bills, don't assume that every bill that's out there means that we're adding.
So we're not adding
laws.
More code to the.
You might have a bill that strikes a ton of language, but it's a bill that has to do it. So some bills don't just add more statutes or statutory language. Some of them will eliminate or reduce government by cutting things out. So there's that part, but 591, I honestly don't understand how you can get that. I mean, the number of bills growing, I think, is a concern.
Particularly when it's a 45-day session. So what I wanted to talk about, though, is this was a masterclass in communication. He had been sending out daily press releases about how many bills he's been mm-hmm. spending for a handful of days, right? 50, 52, and then he's explaining the bills a little bit only to the press, which is such a smart way to go. Then, in the days leading up to the deadline, so he had to sign them by the 21st, by yesterday.
Yeah.
And the days leading up, he's giving no indication that he's going to veto, right? There's no conversation yep. about it. And then he has his monthly press conference yesterday in conjunction with the day. And this masterclass is he comes out and says, I'm vetoing a epic number. No one has vetoed more since Mike Leavitt 20 years ago. And he goes on to be able to explain. And remember, he's running for re-election. He gets to philosophically say, oh, small government, less bills. He gets to philosophically then say, I'm vetoing a handful of these, not from the substance, but hey, you could have made a phone call and these agencies and administrators could have just done this without legislation. What a great message. Then he goes in to talk about a couple of things that he wants to champion, like the coal bill, which he is going to let go into effect with signature, but he asks the legislature to consider some things.
Yes.
So he keeps the rural vote. Then you look at a couple of spendy bills that were not controversial. Like, he checked so many smart political boxes by telecasting that he's signing, keeping himself in play. Because a less adroit governor, this is somewhat a non-essential. Like, if you don't sign it, it just goes into law.
Yep.
And the fact that he used the 20 days, he has to sign 20 days after the session ends. The fact that he used this, this was a masterclass in a re-election communication strategy. He's got a two-day news cycle on it, so he's just getting a communications ovation from me.
So, and contrast that to his first session when he announced, hey, before we even begin, just know I'm going to be vetoing your bills. I remember that, how he kind of called a shot. And then the bills he did veto, many of them were overturned. One particular bill was overturned in record time. I mean, by the time he signed it, they'd already were ready for their override session. And so if you were to contrast that first session and some of that, the politics involved with that versus this one, I would say day and night different, a lot smarter. I think that when you're doing seven bills that you're vetoing, I think there's kind of a broader message that Mara mentions. There's this political less government and kind of, you know, flexing that veto muscle or pen.
Particularly when they're non-controversial.
I would imagine, like, I've had bills vetoed before, and I would imagine that the governor's gone upstream and communicated with the sponsor about what they're thinking to do or have meetings with them before they're going to do it. And so there probably was some fine, I guess, that we can – it'll be okay. But those are the same kind of bills that you could let go through too, because no harm, no foul. And I think there's a message he's sending by going ahead and vetoing those bills.
Yeah, I think a strongest thing
which is fine,
that Mara mentioned was when he talked about the fact that there were, you know, some meetings that could be emails and there were some bills that could be a phone call. And when you look through some of those bills, they really were something where you could be like, this is your job, just do it. You know, it didn't have to be a bill. So I thought that was interesting. Also, let's see, I was losing track of all these. The coal burning one I thought was interesting. This one is one that you've talked about a lot, too, is the film industry. He's obviously not a fan of that going through, so he's letting it go through without signing it. What does the governor not like about it?
So in full disclosure, I work with Washington County on issues, and I work with Greater Zion, which is their Office of Tourism, and they are highly involved in the film. It's a very strong industry. It's creating a lot of jobs in rural Utah, off the Wasatch Front, and in southern Utah. And I cannot tell you why this bill gets as much controversy as it does, because it does create great jobs. There's great synergy. There's a $40 million movie production studio that's being built, announced private sector money coming in southern Utah for that. I don't get why that bill keeps getting put with, like, the magic mushroom study bill.
Those are the two bills he's letting go.
Like, film industry, rural jobs, southern Utah jobs,
and then
magic mushroom study. I hate that too. But he didn't glass half full. It wasn't vetoed. But I think that's a great that's an issue I've worked on. But I think it's a good issue. Here's what's interesting. It was on the Today Show. Payson High School's been working so hard to get Kevin Bacon.
Live.
They got all the kids there, and then Kevin Bacon comes on live, says, "I'm going to be there at your prom," and it's all this big celebration. If the governor just hates the film bill, I hope he doesn't want to go to the Payson prom with the Today Show cast and everyone that's going to go, because does he hate it or not? I mean, if he goes, then embrace that. That's a 40-year-old movie, and it's transcended generations.
I'd go
and it's
do
good.
Footloose prom with them. That sounds
of
fun.
Of course, I think it's fun. I was really excited for those kids. I never knew they did all these videos where they recreated all the scenes, but they really tried hard to get his attention.
Yeah.
He said that he did. That he saw it. It didn't go unnoticed, and he's going to make it out there. That's fun. It's cool.
That is super
and
cute.
And so Utah has a great legacy and history of film, and I'm excited that that's going to happen.
Now, looking back, this has been a while since we talked about it, but when we lost Yellowstone from filming here, was that because of the film industry kickbacks went away, or did they just go because...
That's a great question. So they were a victim of their own success. That show was one of the most popular and watched shows in America, and we have a very small fund. And so it was needing more of what it was getting, or it needed to just keep hold serve with how it was being funded. It didn't need a greater incentive, or rebate back. It just needed to stay the same, and it wasn't able to keep
one
pace.
Thing I'll say to join,
so they went to a different
join
state.
Greg's team, maybe it's switching seats, is that there is some fear in the notion of taking a film industry and just dangling money to get them there. And there are several states that have done this and have later regretted it. And that's sort of the fear that people use to say don't fund it. What Utah has always done is post-performance money. So we don't dangle the cash to get them here. We say, if you come here and you spend locally and you can show that you did that, yes, then we will give you cash. But I will just, like, to oversimplify, I mean, that was an oversimplification of our approach to film, but I think it's a C-note change on even a conservative who could say, okay, fine, if you can show me the economic development happened, and then I can support an industry. Now, I will say what's also interesting is that has not always been true for Utah's approach to business, interestingly. We sometimes just dangle the cash in a very liberal way to get business to
We're
come.
Like, hey, Facebook, do you want a giant come on over. Building?
Do you want to use our money to to have computers here? But it's interesting that we've had a slow roll. I mean, what was a big change for the film industry is when Speaker Hughes was there, because he did champion it during. But this is also interesting because this is a county exercise that is working in conjunction with the Utah Film Commission.
That's right. That's
but
right.
That was an interesting one for the governor to veto in many ways. But he must have had a reason, because I'm going to go back to he had some very big themes in how he did this, meaning I think it was a communications activity as much as it was the substance of any bill.
Do you think it has anything to do with the fact that when people watch all the Hollywood shows, they think, oh, those left-leaning liberals, that's and we don't want to give our money to them
certainly
kind of thing?
Enters into the, that certainly enters into the discussion. But the answer back to that is the hotel rooms. This is a visitor economy we're talking about, whether it's tourism or if you have film production, then more of you have it, then you have crews and you have equipment here. And so it really lends to more film development the more often it occurs. Well, they rent the rooms in blocks of hotel rooms. They give vouchers for a 50-day shoot of $3 million in Grand County and in San Juan County, where they spend it in grocery stores and restaurants. And so it really does ignite and infuse real dollars in the economy. And so that's a visitor economy, and it's a robust one. So when we talk about film, none of that's going to Hollywood actors, you know, that we don't like or whose politics we don't align with. These are going to businesses in Utah. These are going to the businesses that we would want to see, like
but
the
importantly,
lumber yards for sets
Utah is
else.
Attracting, like Georgia attracts a lot,
they
sometimes do sound studios. You're in Georgia, but you don't know you are. Utah uniquely attracts a lot because of its topography, mm-hmm. and that also means the rural economy. And our rural economy is almost a completely different beast than our urban economy is.
And it's ripple effect too, because it's smaller communities. The multiplier of putting those kinds of dollars into those smaller communities, it just has such a greater effect than it would along the Wasatch Front, where 75% of Utah lives.
Yeah. So round two will be interesting because both the Speaker of the House and the Senate President said, okay, well, we'll see if we want to try and override any of these or not.
I know. And have we heard any flags coming up of whether they're going to try to get that 2/3 vote to override any of the vetoes?
I'm laughing because when I was Speaker, and even when I wasn't Speaker, if the political will in the House and Senate was to pass the bill, then I would want to veto override it, because I'd want to defend the legislative prerogative to pass the bill. So that I would always vote yes to override, because the House voted yes and the Senate voted yes, and that's what I would still continue to want
My
to do.
My understanding is they're convening their caucuses, or they're informally polling their caucuses the next few days.
To see if they
and
want
then
to.
Depending on what the body says, they'll convene themselves.
And that is a good process. And I think where it's harder in a state like Utah, where your governor's Republican and your majorities are Republican, it's more of an in family fight versus in other states where I would imagine if a Democrat governor vetoed a Republican legislature's House and Senate bill, they would want to override that if they could. We are doing this. It's just different politics here.
All right. What do we think about the psychedelics going into effect? This will essentially make it so that there can be an official study. People will be able to use this, whether it's for depression or anxiety, if they're involved in that. Is this a good step forward, or did this jump over the commission that was already making decisions on this?
I think it jumped it, but yeah. I think it has been our point of view for several years. I mean, we're interesting alternative medicine adopters and have been much through the history of Utah. And so while we're conservative in our social actions about drugs, we've always been open to alternative medicine. And so these things that cross over in their recreational alternative drugs and they're also medical uses become interesting political conversations. This in many ways mirrors the medical marijuana discussion in terms of what's the case for support, how much peer-reviewed data is there, how much research is in there, and then you have this outcry from users who say, man, I don't know, but I can tell you firsthand that it helped me. I thought we had a process in place, and I was interested that there seemed no political will to stay with that project. This seemed to get fast-tracked in a way that I don't quite understand what the political pressure points are.
Yeah, it's just, I came around with medical cannabis, really because those proponents of it were going to bring it to the people in the most political fashion if legislators didn't really work on something with, physicians.
And they did.
We did. So we got something done. So I've come to this issue reluctantly as, from the political side. But going forward, just deciding what's medicine, what's not, what works, what's not in the political arena. It's not the place I think all of that should happen, but I don't know. I'm just old school on this. I think of these mushrooms. I'm just thinking, honestly, can we just have someone that knows something about this make those decisions versus the House and Senate?
Well, hopefully doctors can be there to guide it. I guess the problem is when you look at what doctors and big pharma farms out to us and the addiction matter that comes from a lot of these drugs, if they're trying it in a controlled environment, can it be any more dangerous than, Oxy or Lortab or whatever
Heidi,
else
we're headed out? Heidi, I gotta tell you, to your point, I'm probably more suspicious of traditional medicine now than I've ever been. So that you're right. I hear what you're saying. And I think alternative medicines as a topic is appealing to me. When you get to mushrooms, man.
Well, and in a state.
All I know is they keep saying it makes you go back to your childhood. I never want to go back there. I would never do this. I have buried this stuff decades ago. I never want to ever go back to being a kid.
Elementary, this fine. I don't want to go back to junior high.
Oh, you take this mushroom. You can dial it. You're in. Back to a 9-year-old. Oh, really? No, thanks. I don't want to go back there.
In a state that does have a fentanyl problem and does have a prescription drug problem, I do think. It appears as though the abuse consequences for natural organic solutions are probably better than the chemical ones that we're leaning on right now.
Yeah, and I think there are people in different industries where it's frowned upon to admit that they have mental health problems. Exactly. They're sidestepping it and using it anyways, whether you're talking about pilots or other people in industries where they want to take away your ability to work if you do have to go on drugs. Maybe looking at other options so that people aren't trying to self-medicate and don't know how to do it or too much or too little is probably a good idea. So we'll see where that goes. One other interesting tweet before we move on from the legislative session. I didn't realize this had passed, and I don't know that it'll make a difference, but this one seemed like a little bit of a message bill. I don't know if it has teeth, but House Bill 516 is a law that would prohibit China, North Korea, Russia, and Iran, and any companies that have majority stakes there from owning land in Utah. I think it's an interesting conversation because for years, people, whether they are linked for sure to the Chinese government or the CCP, have been buying up land all over middle America, which is concerning that our way to sustain and take care of ourselves is getting sold off. And so whether this could actually do anything, because I don't know, but it is an interesting part of the conversation that we're headed to in the years right now. Any thoughts on this as whether it could actually stop anything or if China wanted to find one of their citizens to buy them some land up, could they do it and it wouldn't be linked
to them? So I'm going to out myself as having not read the bill, but the differentiator for me would be if this is just a message bill, if there are no administrative teeth because they don't buy it and say signed China.
Yeah.
Like it's so they're usually layered in companies and they're usually multinational companies. And Utah does business with those companies and those states, those nation states to some degree. So I don't like the simplistic approach to it. I don't sort of like the China bad. I think that that's too simple in an international economy. And if you don't have administrative teeth on this, have you put people in who need to do the research to verify those, then it's just a simple message bill, which I don't have much use for.
So the bill started out and with a smaller percentage of they could own. I mean, you could actually own a majority, but anyway, the way they had the percentages in the original bill, it could still be majority owned by any of these countries, China, North Korea, Russia. They went and made it the majority interest. So there's room for any of these countries or companies from those countries to have some ownership in the land, but not a majority interest. And I do think there are some teeth there. It's interesting, this issue is a growing issue. It's real. Other states have looked at foreign countries that are owning our land. It comes up in places like Coronado in California, where the Hotel Del was looked at to be purchased by a company that was Chinese-based, and you've got your training, naval training bases, and Navy SEALs being trained there, and they prohibited it from happening. We have Hill Air Force Base here, where we have a lot of flight patterns and a lot of training that goes on, where you would want to be sensitive to national security issues and who owns that land or who would be in control of that land or what they're observing. So I do think other states are doing it. I think it's in line for Utah to be sensitive to that issue. And I do think it's a growing issue. I think it's surprising, but I think these foreign interests are acquiring a lot of land in the United States.
I want to move on to the Utah Foundation survey, and I couldn't find a link to it online. I wanted to give it to you guys, but for some reason, I don't know if they're holding out for another week or so. So I pulled this information from a tweet on what were the most important things, and this was unveiled, I think, at the Grand America. The governor was there this week, and it was in February that they do their survey before a gubernatorial election year where they look at and see what are the most important issues to Utah voters. And I was kind of surprised by some of the answers. The most important right now is housing affordability, which we know is not very affordable in Utah right now. Second was politicians not listening to voters is a concern. High importance next down on the list is earning enough to pay for non-housing needs like groceries, government overreach. Medium importance is partisan politics. When you go down the line to important, state local taxes. Lower importance, homelessness, roads, transportation, and crime. And the very least important, abortion, women's issues, crowded neighborhoods, the Great Salt Lake, transgender rights and access. So when you start at the least important, it's interesting because the Great Salt Lake was put at the very top of the legislative issue and what the governor wanted to take care of at the first this year. And people are saying, okay, that's my least important thing. And another thing that I thought was going to be important headed into the presidential election was abortion and women's issues. And that's again on the bottom of the list. Mara, any thoughts on where Utah voters are and what's most important to them?
So the Utah Foundation does do this annually. So yeah, they've got a ton of longitude on it. We haven't seen, I also was looking because they will release the full results and I couldn't find the full results yet.
So don't know the cross.
We don't quite know. Well, it's a slightly different kind of research, but we don't know their methodology, but we do know they've been doing it for
and
decades.
Y2 Analytics did it.
Yeah.
On
so
their
it's legit. Like
it, yeah.
This is a legit cross section. I do think their point feels true to me. And when I've talked to Utah voters, this notion of when the legislative session closes, what the Republicans say, huzzah, you're welcome, we did these things, I think often is not the top list of voters. And I'm actually trying to not be as partisan about that. But there is this disconnect.
See that right
between,
seat over there.
Yeah. But like I do think that they routinely focus on things that aren't the top issues for them. Affordable housing is something that I don't think most people in Utah feel like we've significantly addressed. And that rang really true. There are some things not on the list, like air quality and some traditional environmental things that you usually see on...
No, it's in medium importance.
Right, but like you don't... Usually those are ranking higher. Yeah. And so, and I suspect they have held consistent how they ask the question, which would be, when I look at these results, the first thing you want to say is, oh, did you change how you asked the question this year? Did you describe it? But it is not lost on me that the least important was, in fact, the headlines for the legislative accomplishment list.
That's funny. I like how you put that. So when was this done again? Was this before the session started?
It was in February. Yeah.
Okay. So I when you sent the show notes to us and I looked at this, I rejected this poll almost immediately on most important categories because I thought it was disconnected from what I'm hearing in polling of, now this is Republicans
delegates.
And delegates, but we're seeing this nationally too. We just saw an Ohio Senate race that had a lot of these same issues, and I think that some of these issues are national. But I'll say back in February, maybe it didn't have some of the boiling points or tipping points it has now. I would say certainly housing affordability or the lack of is still a primary issue. But I do not believe that that public safety is low in people's priority right now. I don't care what this thing says. And I think that the immigration issue is it's crossing from a partisan issue. I think it is becoming more of the conversation and it's more of an issue and a higher priority issue in states that are not border states. And I think that's a phenomenon we're seeing around the country. And so I would put those issues a lot higher than where the poll does, just from my sense of things, just as I'm watching and I'm listening. But after that, I think that as I look at it, it looks pretty
But
good.
I will say for me, this holds true again, that Utah folks, citizens, are more moderate than Republican delegates and hyper ideologues on either side. And I think that's what this shows me. This shows me that they are not acting in such a partisan way. They have not been hyper reading partisan literature.
Yeah.
I was gonna make a point, but I've just argued against my own point in my head.
Wow, so I wondered what that pause was.
So I found homelessness to be at low importance. I just don't know who in the world, if they've had to be anywhere in proximity to what's going on with the homelessness, would say that's low importance. But it's probably a statewide poll, so your exposure to it would not be as high.
Yeah, and I think that this is going to sound strange, but I think homelessness is not on the top of minds for a lot of people who have been regulars coming downtown. I think there are a lot of families who are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who come down often to go to Temple Square and do other things. And I'm not saying that they're not going to games and stuff still, but I think a lot of people who spend a lot of time, even if it was just at Christmas every year when family came in town to go do that, that aren't coming downtown, that live outside the city, so it's not something you're thinking about. And I think when you're having a hard time paying your mortgage and foreclosures are up and groceries are costing a lot, that you're probably, like, you're thinking about you and your family, sure. Maybe not the homeless. Sure. So definitely not on probably everyone's top of mind. So kind of interesting looking at those. I'll be interested to see when they drop the rest of that so we can see exactly what happens. So.
And the other interesting thing that I have really low confidence in, will it inform any of our elected officials?
Well, I really don't want kind of an indictment. Where are the people going so I can lead them there type of people. I'd like them to lead out.
I said informed. I didn't say. Yeah, I mean, okay. Right? Yes, I mean, they should listen to it. If they want to argue, if they want to persuade another point of view, good for them. But I do think we don't inform. I think our majority chooses to be uninformed sometimes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if this shapes conversations or what happens, because we're coming up to the state conventions April 27th, so basically a month away for both Democrats and Republicans. There's a lot of delegate meetings going on right now. So I'd be interested to hear who people are running right now, and when they're out there talking to the delegates, what they're saying are their most important
issues.
Well,
to Greg's earlier point, or what I read between the lines, I think the Republican delegates, particularly delegates, are towing a more ideological Republican line than these survey results. Begs the question of, are they the best frontline decision makers for who the broader electorate will be voting for later on in the process?
But the issue I brought up of immigration, this was the topic of discussion, like on MSNBC, when they said people in Virginia are upset about the border. Why in the world would they be upset about the border? And they said, well, because they border West Virginia, ha ha. And people got upset that they said that there's a wall they should put between West Virginia and Virginia. It felt a little elitist in its tone, but that's an issue that was coming up in Virginia. Okay. And I think that in Ohio, in this, as the election for the, again, this is a Republican primary, but I think that the issue is not a extreme partisan issue of homelessness of immigration. I think illegal immigration has crossed over into a concern we all have about our own security. Who's coming across? Why can't this be issue addressed in a serious, straight-faced way? I don't think that's a delegate issue by itself.
But again, not to be too reductive on this, but we often find that Americans' issues are what they're hearing most about. And one of the things that the Utah Foundation does well is sort of ease into a broader, less politically charged conversation about who you are and what you're doing. It's not always a political context in which Utah Foundation asks the question. I think without exception, most when the political voices get turned up, that is how defining, you know, it's a direct reflection for how much they're hearing about stuff. I mean, seldom do we pull something out of the old hat that hasn't been on the news.
On the news, yeah. I want to talk a little bit about national issues right now. Congress, they still have their spending package. It's $1.2 trillion. The House, I believe, passed it a couple hours ago. It's headed to the Senate now. Senator Mike Lee is pretty hardline against it, and for a lot of the reasons that he has in the past. But I always look at this and get frustrated because it's the it's the world we live in where you just, they push it up against the deadline. You don't really know what you're voting for. People get upset with him when he votes no, but he's talking about the fact that they had less than 24 hours, you know, to read this bill that's, you know, 1,000 pages plus. Don't know exactly what you're voting for. And there's probably not a lot of real discussion or time for it to figure out where you can cut spending because they've waited till midnight.
So I'm going to buy this on any issue but the budget. I'm going to buy Mike Lee's old trope of like, oh, it's going so fast. Senator Lee, the budget's not going too fast, buddy. That's not the problem with the budget. And it is your only job. So if you haven't seen a copy, get a copy. And these are not new budgets. These budgets have been starting to, he's right. In its final form, he hasn't seen it. But he's a ranking member. He can participate if he wants. This is just his way of being a non-participant. And to abdicate the responsibility to the only thing you're required to do, I have just no patience for it. So then use your power and authority to get, frankly, your caucus, because the Republicans are the ones who have been slowing up this process, get them to address it perhaps when they should have addressed it almost a year ago. I mean, to have someone in control whining, I have no patience for. If you don't have what it takes to do the job, then get out of the seat. Well, but like, none of these guys are doing it justice. I'll also point out that while I'm ranting and raving on someone who I think is an obstructionist, hats off to Speaker Johnson today. So he was, you know, we had Marjorie Taylor Greene who said, I'm going to boot the fool out. He has a near impossible set of cats to herd. And he was able to cobble together. And the Republicans in the House, who are much more partisan and have to get elected every 2 years, the Republicans in the House, I can't remember, the vote was like 101 for and about 112 against. He had to build a bridge with Democrats. Democrats had to get it over. This was a great legislative job that we have not been able to do in a long time. And I want to take a victory lap, well, a pathetic victory lap, that the Democrats and the Republicans in the House finally did the minimum that they knew. So I have no patience right now for highlighting Lee's obstructionism when I think the House finally got their act together and passed a bipartisan bill.
Here's the vote.
Bill.
It was 286 to 134. So yeah, he got all the votes needed and now it heads to the
And I think
Senate,
the breakdown on the yes vote was about 101 Republicans in that
in
total.
That, okay. So not extremely high.
I would bet that if you had Democrats that voted against a bill in the state house, that you would not necessarily consider that obstructionist. You would say that there's at least a different opinion on how that ought to fly.
22 members, right? Democrats voted against this.
We're 34, I got the little clock out right here, $34,578 billion and change in debt and growing. This number keeps growing as we talk. Okay.
It's but not the debt and the budget aren't the same thing, so Greg. You know that. Listen, don't be that guy.
Oh, you can keep spending. If you take a budget and you can keep printing money to fund what you put in this budget, certainly that debt continues to go up. But here's what I like. So there's a 1,000-page omnibus bill. The AI on this little thing I'm looking at has turned into 10 paragraphs. So I got it right here.
Okay.
When you go through this, and
you're
I won't go
read
through
all 10
I will not.
Sorry.
But what I will tell you is if we are $34 trillion plus in debt, I can tell you, and I think a lot of Americans could tell you, there are things in here that are not have-to-haves that you have to put into this budget to try and at least slow the indebtedness and the printing of money because we have inflationary pressures. We have higher interest rates right now. I think that it is a thoughtful vote, and you can argue because it takes a majority to win a vote. You got to be a Mike Lee. You got to start building your numbers. You have to be a tireless minority.
So great,
you know, setting brush fires in people's
minds
about
how
to responsibly put a budget together, of which you can argue this.
Were
one
you in
isn't.
The Utah House?
I was. Yes.
Did your constitutional requirements sneak up on you?
They did.
Did you not know how to have these compromise confirmations on what is a have not and what is a need to have? Were you like, what? We've only got 48 hours left. So again, we all know the deadline. The deadline is a permanent, well, it used to be a permanent deadline.
Yeah,
but like, I'm not going to listen to a whiner whine when he knows his responsibilities going in.
I don't think he's waiting for this to just land in his lap. I think there is frustration that they don't receive these numbers or these budgets or how it's written earlier in the process. And I do think they do want it. But the way it's delivered. If you want to write a budget and you want to put a bunch of stuff in here you want to pass, you certainly don't put it out earlier. You put it out later because it's an up or down vote, yes or no. And that's what you want to get some of these things passed. So I think that there's a system that works against the thoughtfulness that you're saying every senator.
What are we doing right now? What are we doing now in between Saturday? No, we're keeping our government open. They blew the doors off of deliberation when they completely abdicated doing their responsibility. What we're doing right now is keeping America open, which is a horrible place to negotiate from. And there is nobody to blame but our elected officials in Congress.
And I do want to read one comment from Celeste Malloy. I think she's the only one of our representatives.
She and Blake Moore both voted for it, and the other two voted against it.
And this is what Celeste had to say about it. I should call her Representative Malloy. One of Congress' most important jobs under the Constitution is to pass a budget. Doing so requires leadership and compromise, which is often a principled decision. But conservatives came out ahead on this one with critical wins for our national defense and Border Patrol, including the largest military pay raise in decades and significant cuts to non-defense, non-VA spending. So that's where that vote stands. We'll have to watch and see what happens in the Senate. If you listen to Senator Romney, he's been talking about trying to fix the debt, not with these spending bills that come up every year, but when you look at Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, which is an interesting way to look at the budget, and we could do a whole podcast on that, but he wants to get a commission going in there that figures out how do we keep these entitlements going, because that's the largest chunk of our money that we really need.
Which
to be
I would
at.
Be a huge supporter of, because we should be concerned about our debt. But if we're talking about the debt at the same time we're just talking about this specific congressional bill, they're not the same thing.
Yeah. And it's insane to me, because this bill has to get done, but it's insane to me that in all of his years there, he's got his last 9 months left. He hasn't been able to get anyone on board with this commission. And it's because every time you campaign, people want to point out the people who say you have to change the retirement in age or cut back on how much people are getting, that it's just not popular. But we all know that in the next 10 years, sometime between now and 10 years, that there's no solvency to Social Security anymore. So there have to be changes
until
in the budget.
We elect people who care more about making the hard decision than the reelection, we'll keep getting what we're getting.
Yeah.
I think a sense of urgency on some of these things. I mean, it's easy to hindsight and look at these budget numbers and say, I wouldn't have voted for this or that. But to your point, Mara, if we got to keep the government open, which is clearly what we're talking about, but we are concerned about spending money we don't receive by way of taxpayer revenues. You go into pages of does the National Cancer Institute, in order to keep the government open, needs over $7 billion right now? Does the National Heart and Lung and Blood Institute need $4 billion right now to keep the government open? You can go down that list, and I'm not discounting any of those institutes and those funds, but I'm saying when do we sober up and realize we just can't spend more than what we states do this. They can only spend what they receive by way of taxpayer dollars. These numbers, there has to be some pushback at some point. And I don't know. I just think that
through honest and real negotiation.
I agree.
Not at the deadline, well, at the extended, the ridiculously extended
deadline. They
should start
deadline. Today on the budget that needs to be done.
Yeah, someone needs to send a memo about when the budget's due.
Well, I think your assumption is that none of those conversations we're having, or people weren't saying, we better get these numbers earlier than later. I think that is probably by many of these lawmakers the complaint, that they're not getting that right now. And what are they left to do at that point but to vote no? I mean, I don't know.
Thank you to the Republicans who voted yesterday in the House of Representatives.
Wouldn't you get a skinny if you didn't have the votes to pass it, but you needed to keep the government open, wouldn't you see a skinnier budget have to pass? Isn't that inherent?
We've had that, and has that worked? I mean, people are saying, the House is saying this is, as we just heard from Representative Malloy, I think Moore put out a similar statement. They're saying this is not the budget I would do, but it's a budget I can live with. And as you know, legislation is an act of compromise. So again, I'm just going to stick with the House of Representatives today and say thank you for doing your base level job. And for all of those who are still just going through the political machinations nation of it, shame on you.
Okay, well then let's just give me the number you think we can't keep spending to where we don't push this country off a cliff in terms of our
elect
our
me to the House
value.
Or Senate, Greg, and I will.
Oh, y'all. Okay.
All right. Mara's
so
running.
You
heard
you
it first here
like
on the
everyone,
Take
you just
Two
yelled
podcast.
Jeez.
And I do want to mention super quickly that there has been talk with former President Trump running again, who possibly he might pick for his VPs, his cabinet, and On the list is Mike Lee again as a potential pick for Attorney General. If Trump were to pull off a win, is that a good place for Senator Lee?
I'd like him on the Supreme Court, but yeah, I think he'd be phenomenal.
Who are you going to kill off on the Supreme Court to stick in there?
Who did MSNBC? One of the liberal regime media said that Sotomayor needs to get out of there so that Biden can appoint someone because they don't think she's long.
Oh my
gosh! You're killing the woman.
I'm repeating MSNBC. I can only quote this because it sounds.
You're
rude,
talking about poisoning
your,
her.
One of your left. This is shocking. This is sourced from one of your favorite. Leftist.
I don't listen
regime
to MSN,
media
NBC.
Outsources.
I'm news sources. Spending my time on NPR.
So like, hey, Sotomayor, get out of here. We got to make sure we get someone in there.
So what I'll say about Mike Lee is, it would suit him. I mean, he has had an eye to one of those bigger institutional positions, I think, just since he came and even since he thought about running. So it would make sense to me that he's on a short list.
I want Heidi Hatch as Trump's press secretary.
Okay.
Press secretary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fun job.
That's a great job. Can you imagine how that would be for any president?
On the podium, yes, right
sure.
There. You could handle it masterfully.
Sure, he plays fast and loose with the truth, but, you know, it would be the worst job in the history of jobs to be his press secretary.
I don't think I would like to be any president's press secretary. Miserable. I mean, think of, they're sort of like the vice president job. They always kind of end up looking like idiots because they're trying to cover or, like, spin for the president. I mean,
Dana Perino did a phenomenal job. I see you cut from a cloth like that. I think you do a phenomenal job.
All right, thank you.
Are you working on that with your friend?
I'm pack channeling
DJ
as we speak.
When I find a DJ president that I can feel like I'm not spinning for, then I will totally sign up for that job.
That's a great answer. that is a good answer.
Where I could go out there with my heart and answer real questions.
How come
so
you don't have a
I'm
job
for
me
it.
In the Trump administration?
Yeah, did you notice that? I didn't have it. Mike Lee, Heidi, you? No, I don't know. Not so much.
You know what? I can live with this.
You'd be feeding everyone the Haterade every day.
I want to be his baker. I want to be the person who prepares
his
food.
And I'm not going to say why you want that because it would be rude. Yeah, that is something
I don't know
I
what you're
you
talking
wanting.
About.
Oh, I know.
Being a White House chef, that would be kind of fun.
That's right.
She would poison him.
I don't think she would poison anyone. We're going to get called up by somebody to be like, we heard you on that podcast.
And
there's a lot
joking,
of talk of poisoning.
Joking.
I never said it.
So we had some issues in school districts. Do we want to talk about it? We only have about 5 minutes.
So
what do we say?
I just think maybe it's for another day, but I think it's worthy of our consideration that a little bit ago, Davis County had a problem. The feds came in and actually had a monitor there about racism and discrimination and bullying based on who people were.
Yeah.
And if you read the news this past week, there was a major incident in Logan at the Future Farmers of America. Once a year, the FFA kids go to Logan. So high schoolers from all across the state meet in Logan. One of the participants was a black student from the Alpine Student District, and he had a really overt act of racism happen there.
So sad.
And then there was another incident in Park City in which I think the Park City administration called in some federal oversight. When they did an evaluation and review, there were a number of significant incidences about discrimination, and subsequently they are working with the federal agency to start tracking and implementing. And so good for them. They're being proactive. This isn't just a blanket, but it is a good reminder. And I loved sort of that this happened in a dense city. This happened in a rural area. This happened in a liberal place. It happened in a conservative place. It is to say, people are people. And we all have problems with discrimination and bias and sometimes racism. Racism in America sometimes is used as a weapon, so it's hard. And there is no tolerance for anyone calling each other a racist, right? If you ever call me a racist, my immediate response is one to be defensive, right? It's a hard accusation to make, and it's a hard accusation to have lobbied at you.
Yep.
So it deserves a little time and attention. But I just wanted to note, these are documented stories that are providing data to the fact that Utah is not immune from particularly race-based discrimination.
I think that's an important way to put it, is that Utah's not immune, because sometimes I see stories and instantly when something happens, they're like, Utah's racist. It's a Utah problem. I can't believe we have this. And I'm like, have you guys ever lived outside of Utah and experienced the world beyond this? This isn't a Utah problem.
Right.
This is
a human problem.
It's not even just our country, but a human problem. And so I think it's important not to just be like, well, throw Utah away.
So my experience with this is I grew up in an area where we had diverse populations. I've had friends of different race, color, creed, and I have seen racism. And I mean, I've seen real racism born from hate. I've seen it born from ignorance. I've seen people mistreated in my life. And I'm going to tell you, I've seen it in Utah. I think the big problem we're living through, so Utah, to your point, is no different than any other state in terms of, we have some people with ill will. The circumstances that you're describing, Mara, that happened to those students are over the top. That to happen in 2024 and or even recently, it just blows my mind that these kids could be treated that way. The problem I think we're living through right now is we are in a political environment where if you don't necessarily agree with someone's political objectives, you could be accused of a moral failing like racism that's patently untrue. I'll give you an example. Math. If I'm told that I'm a racist because our math standards are racist, I'll talk to my friends who have experienced racism. Math standards isn't what's on their minds, and it's not in the top 1,000 things that they're worried about. You talk about this recent post from this the Jersey controversy.
From North Carolina, the uproar.
The warriors who think that our America First credit union jerseys are racist or are rooted in racism. If America First credit union jersey is rooted in racism, you're never getting to the real issues.
That hit people
and that mistreat people. These people that are mistreated, they're not going to point to that jersey that our Utah soccer team's wearing. They're not going to point to the math standards. They're going to point to things that are happening in their lives that are terrible. That's what we should really be talking about. And when it gets spread out, everyone gets defensive. They start to roll their eyes at, oh, I'm not racist because math isn't racism or the jersey's not racism. And then all of a sudden it demeans the actual or takes away the importance of the issue or that we do have things we have to confront. So I do think that we have to put real time and attention to this. I just don't like how easily the word racism is thrown around nowadays.
It is, unfortunately. And you bring up that jersey thing, which was tweeted out not that long ago, and the governor was like, okay, this is crazy talk. And I think that's where things start to get crazy, when you just look for anything to create a problem. Maybe I'm not reading into it, and I don't understand what they're getting after, but I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think we all agree to that. But I do think we also need to hear that it is an active problem for all of us to have bias, and sort of getting comfortable with that and having that not be a moral indictment. I mean, I am well aware of what I am biased about most of the time, and I'm sure not at other times. And Greg and I have kidded about this on and off. I'm not moving into just political correctness. I am, though, saying that I do think Utah sometimes forgets to have room. I mean, the DEI conversation was a byproduct of this. The one thing that I think is important, and I hope we do this here, is I do think talking about it, even if we get it wrong, so to speak, or even if it's a non-perfect conversation, what really hurts the most, and I think sometimes in Utah we're prone to this, is not having the hard conversations.
Yeah, but I think that DEI is an academic one that is fine for people in a classroom or somewhere to talk about, that I actually think is racist by itself. But that isn't what we're talking about with this poor student that was in Logan. Okay, that is not DEI we're talking about. And the right. little girl in Davis County, what happened to her, that isn't either. Let's get to the front lines of where terrible things are happening, how people are treating each other, and this academic study of people of race
but
and what
not,
it means and what its
Greg,
ripple effect is.
That's not what
me,
that means to me. So you can't, we're going to have to come to the table whether you value the way I approach it or whether I value you.
Okay.
It is important that we start talking about it because it exists
here. Bottom line it this way. I have friends, like I said, of different race, color, creed. What is discussed about DEI, what's discussed about math standards, what's discussed about your standards for medical school and all those are not my conversations with my friends and not the ones we have when we delve into the topics of racism and what how they're feeling or how they're treated, it's nothing even remotely close to what the real life experiences are with the friends I have and the people I know.
But that's true of every piece of legislation.
It would be demeaning to go hire academic and talk about these things and these institutional influences that are going on. Get down to the real things that are happening right now. That's the stuff we should be talking
about. But Greg, that's every single issue. You never passed a bill that used the exact same language as the conversations you had about that issue.
I'd say it'd be more related, though.
So, no. Yes. I mean, I think that's so disingenuous to say that the bills, guidance documents, administrative procedures in a school district need to sound like your one-on-one conversations is really, I think, missing the larger point.
They're off topic. They're not on the topic is what I'm arguing.
All right. We're going to continue this conversation. I don't think we're going to solve it today, but I think the number one thing we can do is
we could if she just listened to what I'm saying and agree. My goodness. Come on. I'm just dropping truth bombs.
We're just trying to be good, kind people, Greg.
Let's be good, kind people, and good, kind people listen to our podcast.
And we're going to wish Heidi well for some international travel.
Yes. I'm going to go on a little trip, and so we'll be back again in a couple of weeks, taking a little Easter break. If something breaking news and crazy happens, we'll call each other and we'll call in over the phone and figure it all out and solve the world's problems.
I like the world doesn't stop.
She didn't say we could go on unaccompanied. Did you notice that?
We need chaperones.
That would
sure.
be fun. Let's see what happens.
Just break into the podcast room.
It'd be like a
Greg brings his boxing
telephone. It'd be like a Jerry Lewis telephone. We'd be here all day arguing.
Ooh,
it'd be terrible.
I love it. Thanks for joining us. Happy spring, everyone. The snow is returning.